When I was younger, growing up in the country, as a typical boy, I guess, in the bush to some extent, we would go to school. Well, we went to school by a bus that picked us up at 7:30 in the morning and then dropped us off at around about quarter past five in the afternoon. And in winter, we would be leaving in the dark to catch the bus that picked us up at the farm, and then we would get home in the dark. And my little sister, who was 6 years younger than me, I would often have to wake her up when we got to school at Cootamundra to get her off the bus, and then always have to wake her up when we got home in the evening to make her walk up the driveway to the house. In the meantime, we wore a school uniform, as most schools have in Australia, a uniform, not all, but most. And I was always very proud of the uniform. It made a person stand out, in a sense, for the right reasons. You felt part of the group, had the school badge, the school colours, all of that, and only problem was, being the sixth son, when it came to getting things like blazers, they were so hand-me-down that there was not much of the original material left. But we got there. I was always proud of the uniform, though, and no wonder, I suppose, when I joined the Navy, I was always very proud of my Navy uniform as well, and still am. To the point that when I was at sea as a senior chaplain, I had my own steward. You don't get that in the Army or the Air Force. I had my own steward, but I would not let my steward do my washing and ironing. I would do that myself, as I still do to this very day. So that when I wore the uniform and it had double creases or something down the sleeve, I could only blame myself, not anybody else. I was enormously proud of my uniform. The thing with uniforms is that they connect us and identify us to a group. You would all know that, even for those of you who went and voted today locally down at Melrose High School. There was a group selling sausages and other bits and pieces in the Australian tradition as you queued up to go and vote. That group wore a uniform, some of you may recall, and it was a Sea Scouts uniform, and it identified them and their cause. So, and I'm sure that they are really proud to wear it, especially the more badges you get to put on your uniform. It says a lot to everybody that looks at it. In the history of the church and in the history of mankind, the groups that have developed, it seems to me, have nearly always been identified perhaps by a uniform. Not always. Some groups, of course, are identified purely by their colour. Some are identified by their language that they use. Some groups are identified by the kind of clothes they wear. Some groups are even identified by the sort of things they eat, and quite often the way that they eat, particularly in the Middle East, only using one hand to eat. So these external things are not so much symbolic, they are integral to identifying who the group is and what that group stands for, be it religious or non-religious. If we look at ourselves here in this church today or tonight, we have many groups of people that have come together from all over the world. It's one of the beautiful things about this parish. We have people of different colour, of different language, of different cultural background. We all come together in this mix, and if a complete stranger was to walk into this church, he would not know that we were Catholic. He would not know that we were Christian. There is nothing that identifies us as a group. And that's the first time in history, in the history of mankind, that a group is identified not by something that they wear, their language, the colour of the skin, or what they eat. Jesus gave us the commandment to love one another as he has loved us. And then he said, The last words of the gospel: by this all people will know that you are my disciples. For the first time in history, the group was united and identified by the way they loved one another. It's even recorded in Acts. The pagans and the Jews who became Christian followers, it's recorded how they sold their goods and looked after the needy. First time that people came together and people could say, see those Christians, see how they love one another. We are identified as a group by our love for one another. Under the microscope, the opposite occurs, perhaps. We are also identified by the way we do not love one another, even the stranger. And that's probably the biggest scandal with Christianity, is the disunity that still exists amongst all of the followers of Christ, no matter what their colour, their language, what they wear, or how and what they eat. For us, then, if we truly take on the commandment, this new commandment, we should be able to really change our world and the world. And I wonder why it is that we haven't, or we can't. We don't seem to get there. Individually, I think many of us do. But collectively, as the group, we have not achieved the one thing that he asked us to do, it seems to me. And that's very, very sad. In the Catholic Church, for example, I find it very sad that the greatest disunity that exists, from my experience, comes from people who would profess to be so-called good Catholics, whatever that means. That is a scandal. In one sense, it's a private scandal because it's usually between an individual and another individual. It doesn't become necessarily a big group scandal. But the bottom line is the singular behaviour reflects and influences the group behaviour. If we, as an individual, cannot love our neighbour, then we are living an hypocritical life trying to love Jesus. Because Jesus' love was unconditional. No colours or flavours. His love was unconditional. His love was sacrificial. He put others first. His love was forgiving, not holding on to grudges. His love was totally forgiving. And his love was and is eternal. And if we want to talk or reflect about the love that gets pushed into our face so much by the media, and particularly by advertising these days, it is a love of the flesh, or a love from the flesh. And that flesh love is more often than not selfish, egotistical. It's very often unforgiving. And it's insincere very often. And also, love of the flesh is more often than not a temporary thing. So if we want the cure to bring this commandment, this first time ever, that's why it's called a new commandment. If we want the cure for our world and for ourselves, then we need to seriously embark on the mission, both as an individual and as a collective Christian group, under whatever Christian flavour. We need to remember that our love must be unconditional. It must be sacrificial. It must be forgiving. And then we will celebrate our love eternally.